The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your mom or pop to getting that first autograph from Mike Schmidt or Dr. J, or going back to Paul Arizin, Del Ennis, Richie Ashburn days, my favorites, or when you got to Connie Mack Stadium and you saw that green grass, or even the green carpet at the vet. When you're a kid, it all looked beautiful. Well, it's a feeling you get that brings you back to your own Philly Field of Dreams. The Museum of Sports Show is on the air, and we're ready to go there with you. I'm Lou Scheinfeld. Doug Scheimel is off for the next few weeks, rehearsing and starring in a theatrical production of Dancing in the Rain. And how appropriate would it have been if it opened last night? It would have closed. Anyway, he's got the acting bug, so he's off for the next few weeks. Susan Thames is off today as well, so you're stuck with me going solo. Our show is dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that one day hopefully will capture it all right here in Philadelphia. By the way, we're Zooming live on the Museum of Sports and WWDB Facebooks, so look us up and check us out. Museum of Sports Show is brought to you by Tepachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center, the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And believe me, if there's anything you want messing with your heart, it's non-invasive treatment. Coming up in a little bit is Leon Searcy Jr., the former great NFL lineman whose life has been a roller coaster of good times and bad. He'll tell you what it takes to pull yourself together and try to get back into the game of life. And at 4:30, our weekly sports memorabilia segment with the King of Collectibles and our Museum of Sports partner, Nick Tepachi Jr. You've got to hear what he has to say about this crazy, crazy money-making world of buying and selling sports cards, Pokemon cards, superhero cards, and even cowboy cards, and any kind of vintage cards. It's a wild world out there. But up first is our great friend and former Phillies broadcaster Chris Wheeler with his take on the state of baseball today, with players booing the fans, the Phillies' chances of making the playoffs with half their stars missing, and how well are you hitting off the tee on the back nine, Chris?
Well, that's number one thing to talk about, Lou. Last time we were together, I was in Clearwater in the press box. We just finished an exhibition game, and we did the show and had fun. I'm back now in Bluebell, Pennsylvania. I live at Bluebell Country Club, so I'm around golf courses all the time, both here and in Florida, and I do enjoy going out and playing. I never have a bad day on a golf course.
Well, I'm sure that's true. But I have to tell you, I had one of my best days recently. I was watching the Phillies game, and who is sitting in the broadcast booth but Chris Wheeler? And I said, oh my God, I am so happy. I actually turned the sound on. I listen with no sound because I'm not a big Tom McCarthy fan. I like John Kruk and some of the other guys. But when I saw you, I turned the sound on, and I always listen with my headphones. So I listened to everyone, and I thought, darn, it looks good to see you back in there.
Well, that was a lot of fun. They contacted me. Jeff Halleckman, who's a producer of the telecast, asked if I was going to be around for David Montgomery's night. Of course, I was going to be. And also the next day for the Manny Trio. He said, would you go on the air with us for a while? I said, of course. Yeah, I said, but then I can leave, right? And he said, yeah, then you can leave. So I had a great time that night. The first night I was on with Tom and Johnny, and Jimmy Rollins is one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
And the next day I was on with Greg Luzinski, and Charlie Manuel when I did it the next day. So it was fun. And I got a lot of nice compliments about it. And, you know, it's one of those things, Lou, you've been around forever too, like me. You know, it's old hat. You just sit down, you do what you're good at, and then you enjoy it. More than anything, I just went in there and enjoyed myself. And it was nice that so many people were happy to see me back for an inning or two.
Well, I was going to text you right away, but I didn't want to distract you. I figured you'd be a little, you know, your phone was blowing up anyway. But you seem so natural. It seemed like you never left. And I, for one, I'm still upset that you're not there anymore. Because one of the things you did, that you came very well prepared. You knew your stats. You knew the visiting team. You knew inside stuff. And you delivered it like a fan would, like two guys talking at a bar. And I respected that. And I haven't seen that since. And I watch every game like, you know, till 10 o'clock anyway. And, yeah. And I just loved your approach.
Well, I don't know if I could do that nowadays, Lou. I don't know if that's what they want. You know, they want a shtick in there now. And And no offense to the guys that do it, because they all do a good job and they all do the best they can. And the thing you had to do is what I learned early on, was you have to be yourself. And that's what I am. I was just kind of a fan turned loose that happened to work for a club. And I always felt that I should be the most prepared guy to go on the air that night. I knew all our players, I knew all our stuff, but I didn't ever want a player to come in from the opposition that I didn't know him or know something about him. And I just had fun. You know, some nights people didn't like what you did. Some nights people like what you do. I could say the same thing. And back in those days, people had to write you a letter. I could say one thing and I'd get two letters. They'd say one thing and the other person say the other thing. I think, what the heck? I only said it once. So, you know, that's what you dealt with. But they, you know, it's more the social media now, the tweeting and the fate and all that nonsense. And I don't want to do all that. I don't want to be distracted by that when I'm on the air. So it's best that I'm gone and I'm just a fan and I watch the games and enjoy them that way.
Well, you have said on previous shows that you're a lucky guy. You got to do what, for 30 some years or whatever, 40 years, something you loved in baseball. And now you keep your hand in Clearwater doing the public address announcing, which is fantastic. But for some of the people who may have not seen you last time you were on, tell how you got started in Philly and how you got this job.
Well, I'll try and do it quick because it's quite a story. 1976, we're playing the Montreal Expos in the doubleheader at Old Parc Jarry. We win the first game. We win the National League. There's no divisions at that time. We just win the National League, and we go to postseason. We win the National League East, and we go to postseason. So we win the first game of the doubleheader. We go in. We do all the champagne and all that crazy stuff, and I don't think it's ever been done since. Had to play a second game. So we come out to play the second game, and Harry and Whitey are doing the game, and I was always hanging out with them because I love broadcasting. And I walk in, and Whitey, he didn't want to do the game. Whitey said, "There's this Chris Wheeler, the guy that screws everything up for us. The newsy notes are always wrong. He's always wanted to do this." He took his headset off, and he said, "Sit down." I sit down there, and I'm with Harry, and I'm having a ball, you know, doing what I would do later on. You know, a guy would run, hit and run, all those sorts. Anyway, unbeknownst to me, our audio was going into the booth of the general manager, the great John McHale. And Bill Giles was in there with him. And Bill told me that John said, "Bill, who's that guy on the air with Harry Callis right now?" And Bill says, "That's one of our PR guys. And I have no idea what the hell he's doing in there." And John said, "You know what? He knows our players better than we do. He's pretty good." And Bill says, "Yeah, he's pretty good." So Giles then decided, and the following year, Andy Musser had just done the games by himself when the games were televised when he was on radio in 76. They decided he needed a partner on radio when the games were televised. I was traveling. I was on every road trip. He didn't have to pay me anything more. So he decided I would be his guy, and I did it for 37 years. So I always say, Lou, if we'd have lost the first game of that doubleheader, I may have never been a broadcaster.
It's the right time, the right place, and a little bit of luck. Where did you grow up?
Newtown Square in Delaware County. I was born in Yaden, and we moved to Newtown Square in 1952 when I was seven, and went to Marple Newtown High School in Newtown Square, and then went to Penn State University where I graduated. So I've been pretty local. I worked in Chicago for a while at CBS Radio, New York, CBS Radio, and then WCAU Radio, of course, in Philadelphia, and then lucky enough to be with the Phillies. Actually, right now, I'm still kind of associated with them. So this is year number 50, number 50.
Wow, that's awesome.
I started in 71, right around the time after you guys had opened the Spectrum and right? All that stuff was going on around here.
We opened in 67 at the Spectrum, and you opened in 71 after closing the Connie Mack Stadium in that riotous night. The fans took the building apart before the Gepper brothers could. So, are you worried about baseball? I am. It's on late. Everything's at night. The players seem selfish, maybe greedy. They're booing the fans. The Mets are a whole nother story, but I'm worried about baseball.
Yeah, there's some imperfections, obviously. That thing that happened with the Mets, you know, you have to, when you look, you've been on the East Coast your life, you know what it's like here. It starts about Maine and it goes to just south of Wilmington, I always said, and it's different, especially in baseball. And the last thing you can do is rip the fans, for crying out loud. I mean, you're going to lose. You're going to lose that battle in so many ways. So when Javi Baez and those guys did that the other day, that was just stupid. As far as the game itself goes, yeah, there's some things there's some things that need to change. It's a game that really hasn't changed that much. And, you know, we could go on forever about that. You know, a few things that I always, it's too much commercial time, but that's never going to change because you have to pay for things. But you could take the shifts away tomorrow, and that would be fine. I wouldn't care if they ever shifted again. They could do some things as far as keeping the hitters in the box and making the pitchers throw the ball a little bit quicker. There's a lot of easy things to do, but it sounds easy, Lou, because we have a very, very strong players association in baseball. And I hear it all the time. How come you guys don't have a cap? And I think, what the heck do you think all those work stoppages were about? You think baseball didn't want to have a cap, but Marvin Miller and Don Fehr beat baseball and the union won. So we can't do the things you want to do when you want to do them. So those kind of things are the things that are happening in our sport. You would like to change some things, but there's a collective bargaining situation going on right now. You don't want a work stoppage next year. So we'll see what they're able to incorporate to make some changes.
Well, I just want to remind our fans, we're on Facebook. So if you want to see Chris Wheeler or what he looks like today, still as handsome as ever, tan and lovely. Chris, what do you think about the DH? I kind of like it because the pitchers can't hit.
Right. Here's the thing. It's going to happen. I think that's one of those things we don't know anything, but we feel it's going to happen. See, guys like me maybe not had been as good at their job, Lou, if we had the DH in our league, because it takes away a lot of strategy. It takes away a lot of the things that fans like to second guess the manager about, especially about whether you hit for the pitcher or why you use a pinch hitter here or you did that or why didn't you double switch and do all those things. All that, I think the game is probably going to be better off with the DH. In my case, the way I did a game, I'd have really missed it, because so much strategy in baseball is in the National League that is not in the American League, where nine guys hit and maybe they stay in the same spot the whole time. And you got a guy who's DHing that can't do anything else. You know, you can't play him anywhere, because that's why he's a DH for a number of reasons. So I think it's going to happen. I think it'll be better for the game. But personally, as a National League baseball guy, I'd miss it.
Yeah, I think so. I like the manager coming out and telling the umpire he's making a double switch and he's bringing somebody in and to bat ninth instead of the pitcher. And the pitcher, it's not going to last long. He's in the cleanup spot right now. And the umpire writes it down on his little notebook. And I wonder how they keep all that straight. But that is strategy that has disappeared in the American League and will disappear in the National League.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example of when Rory Halladay came, and there's been a lot of talk about Doc because of us putting him on the Wall of Fame and retiring his number and all that. When Doc came over here, he really got ticked if Charlie would come out to take him out of a game or pinch hit for him, because you might be down by a run or you might be down by two runs and you only have maybe one more at bat. Well, in the American League, he never had to think about that. In the American League, he just pitched, and he pitched all nine innings. So you know what he did? He made himself a very good bunter by the time his career ended, and he also could put the ball in play once in a while and get a hit. Of course, that's Rory Halladay, and he was as competitive as anybody I'd ever seen since Steve Carlton. But that was the thing about coming to the National League from the American League for a pitcher like him. He didn't like being taken out of a game, but he had to be taken out because of the strategy involved.
Well, speaking of bunting, I was so happy to see Bryce Harper lay one down the third baseline, and there was nobody there to field it. And I thought, God bless him. Make them – and the shift, I hate the shift. And I know there's talk about all infielders will have to be on the dirt and two on either side of second base, because somebody hits a rocket to short right field and it's picked up by the second baseman and the guy's thrown out. How can you hit 300?
Yeah, it looks like you're playing softball and you got a rover out there.
That's right.
That's my point too. And I totally agree with you that you your feelings on it too. If you get rid of the shift, look, the two biggest problems we have right now is the pitching is so good and these shifts. So we don't have the action that we used to have before. There aren't as many base runners. There's so many swings and misses because so many guys are trying to hit home runs, but also because these pitchers are really good. They're throwing 80, 95, 100 mile an hour with good breaking balls and those kind of things. And they come in and they pitch for an inning or they face their three hitters and they're gone. Those two things, if you could eliminate that shift and all the stuff you're doing with bullpens and guys swinging for the fences, there would be more base runners, there would be more action, and it'd get rid of so many strikeouts. Look, everybody wants to get a bullpen where nothing happens in the last few innings. When you're a fan and your team's winning and the other team's striking out all the time, yeah, you're happy with that. But nothing's happening. So that's one of those things that I think somehow they have to do something about it. And I hope they do in our lifetime.
Well, they're talking about bigger bases, which I guess helps if you're going to steal or not get picked off or whatever, keep runners in the game. They're talking about moving the pitching mound back maybe a foot. And I know they're experimenting with some of this in the lower minor leagues. But one thing I hadn't heard anybody talk about, and I would like to see the elimination of the did he go around offering at the ball? Well, he's not swinging at the ball. So he's trying to hold up. So he crossed the plate. But that so many strikeouts that way. And I find that very frustrating.
Yeah, the check swing. I know what you're saying.
Check swing.
You're a longtime fan and understand the game a lot. Think how many check swings. Think how many non-strikes Steve Carlton threw that he got strikeouts on. Because he had that devastating slider that to a hitter spun like a fastball. So they started to swing right away. And then they tried to hold up. Couldn't in time. That was a check swing, and he would get a lot of those 3,000 strike. I always said he probably got more strikeouts on balls than any pitcher I ever saw.
Well, there's I forget what I was going to say, but let's go back to the fans booing. Mike Schmidt, 1985, in Montreal, lost it. Told the Montreal Gazette what kinds of terrible things about Philadelphia fans. I mean, he really let it loose. And of course, they were coming home a day or two later, and he was being vilified everywhere. And what did he do? He put on a wig and glasses and ran out onto the field and diffused everything. And how good was that, that he showed that sense of humor, which ended the controversy?
Well, it humanized him. Right. It was great because Michael, in his inimitable way, thought he was given, he told us, well, I was just given an interview to Associated Press. I didn't know that would go into Philadelphia, Michael. Associated Press, we tried to explain to him what it was. And he went, oh, I didn't know that. Well, now you know, and that's what happened. And you're so right. And Larry Anderson helped him a lot with that. Larry Anderson had that great sense of humor, that self-deprecating sense of humor. It was Andy's idea to give him that wig that he had. You know, Larry had all kinds of costumes because he was always had some shtick going on. So he gave him that wig and suggested he put the sunglasses on. If you remember, he's playing first base that night too. So he did. He ran out of the dugout. He didn't have far to go. He just, because we were on the first base side, so right. Running out of the dugout, and the fans were gunning for him, Lou, as you just said. They couldn't wait it. As soon as he blew, and then they started to laugh.
Right.
Clap for him, and it did. It totally diffused that situation. He had his other moments as time went on, but that night, that was one of the great, and we had no idea that was going to happen until he ran out on the field. It was tremendous.
Well, that's one of the iconic photos in Philadelphia Phillies lore, along with your World Series dance.
Oh, yeah.
The stand up, turn around three times, throw your fists, and sit down again. That's probably got 500,000 views on YouTube. So it's great to have some fun with the game, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the story behind that night, and I, of course, I didn't even know I did it until I saw it in the 10 afterwards in our World Series party. And I went, oh, no, look at that idiot. And the next day we were on the parade and the young kids were all going like this at me. And I went, you know what? I guess it worked. But that night, if you remember back in 1980, we weren't on the air. The local broadcasters couldn't do the World Series.
Yeah.
So Perry never got to call the World Series in 1980. He did an unbelievable recreation on a record. I laugh when you call a record now, 78. He did a great job, but it wasn't the same thing. And I remember sitting there that night when there was one out or two outs and that runner was at second base and the last hitter was up and Lidge was out there. And I was saying to myself, whatever you do, shut up. Don't make a sound. Let the man have his moment here. And he had a great call, of course, as obviously he always would have a great call. And I just did that. And I wound up high. And behind me were, it was Greg Murphy. It was Jim Jackson and Tom McCarthy were behind me. And I just stood up and I saw them there and I high-fived them. And I said, with this thing, I said, you know, I did 37 years on the air and I'll be remembered for a full body spasm.
All right. Well, we're going to let you go in a minute, but what are the Phillies' chances of making the playoffs with a patchwork lineup? And they got a lot of fight in them.
They really do. I mean, they're losing 6-0 today and have the game tied up now at 6-6. So that just gives you an indication of, as you just said, Lou, they got a lot of fight in them. They really do. Whether or not that they can get to postseason play, it's such a long shot because of all the holes they have. But to their credit, you know, they're starting to play some of the teams that they quote-unquote should beat, and they are beating them. It'll get harder and harder as the season goes on. Like Nola had a bad outing today.
Yeah.
And you have to have him. You have to have him pitch for you. So, in my opinion, it would be a real, real long shot for them to win the division or become a wild card team. But if they did, it would really be some magic going on around here during this month of September. And obviously, as a Phillies fan, I would love to see it happen.
Well, I think we all would, and it would be great to come down the stretch to win in September and actually have a winning record. I think John Middleton might feel he getting a little bit of a return on his money for this year. And I'm glad he's been holding his tongue lately. He's probably very frustrated, but he's a smart man. Anyway, Chris Wheeler, one of my all-time favorite friends and announcers, third in line behind Richie and Whitey. Richie and Harry. I hope to see you back in the booth maybe next year. They get you back in there and be able to watch you with the guys.
Thanks, Lou. A lot of people know what I did, and a lot of people just have heard about what you did in Philadelphia, which is so important to so many of us as fans. And it's an honor and a privilege to hang out with you on these shows. I really enjoy it.
Well, thanks. We enjoy having you. You're a real Philadelphia guy, and that's what we talk about. Anyway, after we come back, we're going to have Leon Searcy Jr., who made it big in the NFL as a star lineman, then lost it all. And now he's getting it back. So we'll be back in a minute.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get it. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD-FA. ACC at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, the riots, the war. That is until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Relish the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, and Kate Smith. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, coming this fall.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860. Show, and I just got the disappointing word that our 420 guest, Leon Searcy Jr., has a family emergency and can't be on the show. So you're going to be stuck with me for the next 20 minutes before we go to our 440 break and bring on our partner, Nick Tapachi Jr., to talk about the crazy world of sports collecting. And it's just unbelievable what's going on with sports collections, as he'll tell you, because baseball cards, football cards, basketball cards, Pokemon cards, wrestlers, cowboys, superhero cards are selling for $1 million, $2 million, $5 million. It's just absolutely crazy. I mean, it's not a Mike Trout rookie card or a Roger Hornsby card or whatever. It's cards that kids are finding in their binders. In fact, my son found a binder with Pokemon cards, and he's 28 years old now, so they're probably close to 20 years old, and I'm told that some of them are worth a couple thousand dollars a piece. So I am just sending a message to Nick Tapachi Jr. to please come on as soon as possible, because our guest, and guess what, our guest has bailed because of a family emergency. I hope things are okay down there in Jacksonville. But the Phillies just took the lead 7-6. They were down 6-0. Aaron Nola got rocked for 6 runs and 2 walks, 6 hits, 6 runs, 2 walks in 4 innings, I think it was. And now the Phillies, as has been their bent lately, have stormed back with 7 runs. And this team has fight in them. Wouldn't it be wild if they got into the playoffs when nobody expected them to even have a winning record the way the season was going earlier? They've got a patchwork lineup, as Chris Wheeler and I were just talking about. 3 or 4 guys who probably should still be in AAA, but they're up here playing regularly because several of our regulars are hurt or on COVID-19 hiatus. But it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to see the Phillies winning. Well, I know it's only September 2nd, but they're winning in September. They won at the end of August, and they're winning going into September. So let's hope they can pull this game out. And then they go to Miami for, I think, 3 or 4 games. And they've got not the toughest schedule going down the road. But like Chris Wheeler just said, it's going to be tough making the playoffs. And if they do, they got to play a 1 or a 3, best of 3 or 1 and done, depending where they finish against one of the better teams, and it could be done. But it would be fun. And guess what? Philadelphia could use a little fun. We're flooded. We got downpoured yesterday. Today's a gorgeous day, and if anybody could get out on the golf course and it's not full of puddles, it's a bonus day today. But what I want to talk about is the athletes today. And I know a lot of people say they it's personal choice. They don't want to get vaccinated. And I respect personal choice, but they are the ones that are not. And some of them have health-related reasons. Some have cultural reasons. But they're doing a disservice to their fans, their owner, who's paying them millions of dollars, and to their teammates and the people in the office. It's a difficult situation. I agree, but some teams are, and the Phillies are, they said, were maybe about 50% vaccinated a few weeks ago. Maybe it's up a little bit more now, but some teams are 80-some percent. NFL teams announced they're 100%, and I think that's amazing with a 53-man roster. So the game itself of baseball is in trouble. And Chris Wheeler and I were talking about, look, I go to bed around 10 o'clock. I'm up, I was up at 5 this morning. I didn't want to be, but I thought I heard a noise, and I've been up ever since. So, but I do normally get up around 7, and by 10 o'clock, I'm pretty much ready for bed. And the Phillies are in the 7th inning, and I'll put my phone next to my bed. I'm not going to listen to it, but I'll watch if the score changes, and then finally I turn my phone off around 10:30. And first thing I do in the morning, of course, being a fanatic, is turn the phone back on. Hey, did they win? And if they win, I'm off to a good start. If they lost, I go, oh, man, oh, well, it's only a game. But that's you know, they talk about Philadelphia being a great sports town. We don't have the greatest sports teams, but we're a great sports town because we have the best sports fans. And when players talk about booing the fans or talk about the fans distracting them or whatever, the fans are basically paying their salaries. You saw how dull it was. And here's Nick DiPaci Jr. Thanks for jumping on early, Nick. We had a family emergency with our 420 guests. So you're going to be talking about everything you ever knew about anything in a few minutes. But I want to finish my diatribe here because I've always wanted to go on for like 10 or 15 minutes without Doug Shimel reining me in or whatever. But I'm talking about the fans. I'm talking about the players, specifically the Mets players. Thumbs down on the fans and the poor Mets organization. This guy, Steve Cohen, who owns them, I know he's got billions and he's got thick skin, but man, every day is another something with the Mets. It's unbelievable. And Philly fans don't mind that because we are the best fans. There's no doubt about it. Look, I'll say this about the Phillies, that they were not playing well in July and August, yet they've been getting 23,000 people a game. And they got 38,000 when the Yankees were here. And even now against teams like Washington and Miami, they get 23,000. And I think that's fantastic. The 23,000 people actually left their homes, got in their cars or got on public transportation, went down to South Philly, went into the stands, bought hot dogs, bought beer, bought a scorecard or whatever, and got home at 11 o'clock, midnight or whatever it is, and went to work the next day. 23,000 people is a lot as far as I'm concerned. I know there's 42,000 seats in that place, but filling half the house to me tells you what kind of fans we have. Now, I know you, Nick, and your dad, and before that, your grandfather, and I know you're already grooming your son to be great Philadelphia fans. And I know you're going to be in the stands for the Eagles home opener on the 12th. And last week, as we rushed off, I asked you to give me your estimate of how many games in a 17-game schedule the Eagles will win. And you said 8 and 9. So do you still feel that way?
I just actually 5 minutes ago, I was talking to our friend Paul, who's a physical therapist. And he's from Poland. He asked me how Eagles were going to do literally 5 minutes ago. And I had the same exact answer. So, yes, I'm sticking with it.
Well, I think that would be a good season. I mean, considering I keep saying 4-12, it was 3-11-1 or whatever it was. They tied a game. To me, it was a loss. But they won four games last year, put it that way. And after Carson Wentz departed unceremoniously, and Jalen Hurts is anointed at the starter, and he's got some good backups right now in case he needs some help. And some new players and some guys left. And guys will get hurt. I think eight wins would be terrific.
Oh, absolutely. And by the way, when you were talking about the Phillies, I saw an alert on my phone, and it said the Phillies were trailing 6-0, not anymore. So
seven,
another comeback.
7-6, they're leading. Yeah, I mentioned right before you came on that Aaron Nola gave up six runs, six hits, and I think two walks in four innings. And that's a real mystery how he's slipped in the last year and again this year. So I hope they get him straightened out because he's such an important part of the team. And you know what? It's like in football. If one of your key linemen goes down, and somebody has to move over and somebody else comes in beside them and they haven't played together, it throws everything off. And that affects the quarterback on the offensive line. So, but I think 8 wins would be fantastic. And you know what? Do you think 8 wins might be enough to win the division?
You know what? Everyone's high on Dallas right now. I don't think Dallas, I mean, their defense last year was terrible. They were atrocious. And this year, I don't think they're that improved. So I think 8 and 9 could win the division. Now, Washington, they have the most complete roster. Obviously, Fitzpatrick with his Fitz magic, they call it. They're banking on him to have that for a full season. He's never shown it for a full season. He's had he's had his moments, but maybe a 3 or 4 game stretch here and there over the years. So I don't, Washington definitely needs their franchise quarterback. They need to find their franchise quarterback. Otherwise their roster is loaded. And they have a great team. The Giants, I think we're going to be better than the Giants. Let's put it that way. I was never a big believer in Daniel Jones. So I think if we could get by the Redskins, I keep saying Redskins. It's hard to let go of old habits.
Well, that's true. And let's segue that. We can get back to this. Let's segue that into collectibles. The Redskins jerseys, Redskins scorecards, Redskins paraphernalia. Is it worth more today than it was a couple of years ago?
You know what? I haven't really been following it recently, but you know, the older players. Well, and I'm going back to Sammy Baugh.
Slinging Sammy Baugh.
Yeah, those guys are never gonna are never gonna go down. They're gonna keep appreciating, and I guess like maybe more modern guys, it's not gonna be as much. But like a Joe Theismann, John Riggins, Art Monk, memorabilia from those guys in the glory days when they were the Redskins. I think they're appreciating, but I would say not like a Clinton Portis or RG3, none of those guys in recent years. I would say it probably hurts the brand, the name change for the players who did not have success when their name was Redskins.
Well, there are probably some fans in Washington and the Virginia area that have a particular favorite player. That may not be a big brand name, and they'd be willing to pay more than somebody else might be in Washington on the West Coast, Washington, state of Washington. So as you said many times, it all takes two people to want something, and they start bidding. And interesting, but look, what happened with Washington, the football team, is probably going to happen to the Atlanta Braves and possibly the Chicago Blackhawks. It's already happened to the Cleveland Indians, and maybe a Bob Feller or an Al Rosen, great Cleveland players. I'm going back into the 40s and 50s, but maybe in the 1920s and 30s, there were even Hall of Famers who wore a Cleveland Indians shirt that a Cleveland fan might be willing to shell out big bucks for.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And Tris Speaker going back to Nap Lajoie, and they were actually the Cleveland Naps. I don't know if you remember that, Lou. That was a little before your time.
I think I read that in the Bible, yes.
They were named after Napoleon Lajoie before they were the Indians. But, when the name changes, the iconic players, and especially those older players, like Bob Feller, Al Rosen, as you mentioned, Larry Doby, I think that will actually have a positive effect on their memorabilia. Even like Jim Thome, and probably a few of those players from those iconic Indian teams. Of course, steroids have since tainted Manny Ramirez and Albert Bell, but Albert Bell,
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, and I was going to say Albert Bell is right. One of the guys that I think he could have been an all-time great. But his career ended due to injury when he was in Baltimore. But he was one of those guys. I mean, we took a shot on guys like that. In the 90s, my dad bought all those jerseys. Albert Bell, Mo Vaughn, taking a shot that some of these guys would be Hall of Famers. And you know what? It didn't work out for some of them. But that's part of collecting, where you have to take a shot. And if you think someone's going to have a career worthy of the Hall of Fame, and you want to collect their memorabilia, you got to get it while they're playing.
I'm glad you mentioned Albert Bell, because I was trying to think of his name as we're talking about Cleveland, and he was not one of my favorite players for a couple of reasons. But it's funny how you come up with a name out of the blue, like Bob Feller and Al Rosen, and there are probably 50 other Lou Boudreau, you know, people who were back in the 40s when the A's were in Philadelphia. So we paid a lot of attention to the American League teams. But we're going to go to a commercial break here right now, our 4:40 break. So stick with us, and we're going to get you on the other side. We'll talk about the crazy card business. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, the riots, the war. That is until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Relish the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, and Kate Smith. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, coming this fall.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatchi Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatchi is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatchi, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034. Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available soon on Amazon, eBay, and Barnes & Noble. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get it. Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
All righty, welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show. I'm Lou Scheinfeld, going solo this week in a kind of a scramble. One of our guests had a family emergency and at the last minute had to tell us he couldn't make it. And fortunately, Nicholas Depatchi Jr., the heavyweight of collectors and memorabilia, was able to jump in early, and we've been talking about Eagles' chances and talking about things that are worth more money today than they used to be because of the name change. For instance, the former Washington Redskins have no new nickname and may not come up with one. And the Cleveland Indians changed their name, I think, to the Guardians, something like that.
Yes.
And the Seattle, the new team in Seattle, the National Hockey League team, is called the Kraken. K-R-A-K-E-N, which is a sea monster, which is indigenous to the Seattle area, I'm told. I don't know what that means, but apparently the Kraken is a scary thing. But Nick, let's talk about cards. It's crazy. Pokemon. I mentioned earlier that my son's 28 years old. He came over a month ago to have dinner, and he went down into the basement, and he found his old Pokemon binder, and he's got about 50 or 60 cards in there, and I guess he started saving them when he was 8 or 9. So I talked to a couple of people, and I don't know about these cards, but they said they had old Pokemon cards and they sold them for as much as $2,000 a piece. So it's Pokemon. It's super what do you call them, superheroes, comic book covers. Our friend Ed Golden, or Ken Golden at Golden Auctions, he's selling everything in sight, and the numbers are staggering. So Nick, I mean, what's going on?
I mean, when you have a LeBron rookie that just sold for $2 million, and I mean, the end I don't think is in sight for this, for this boom in the card market. And like you said, it's even extending to Pokemon cards and what's the other one, Yogi something, I can't remember the name of it, but all those anime shows, and you know, and you know what, who knows when it's gonna what it's gonna hit next. Maybe Pogs. Do you remember Pogs? Were a big collectible in the 90s.
I remember Pez, P-E-Z.
Oh, guess what? My son got into Pez a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
Every kid loves Pez. And Eric, our curator, he right. went on eBay and he bought a bunch of vintage Pez dispensers, and they had the original Pez with it. I don't think we opened that Pez, but yeah, no, he bought like my son, like all these like Ninja Turtles and Wizard of Oz Pez dispensers, and they're collectibles too. So you know what, the collector's market is as vast as the ocean. I mean, you could find a collector for almost anything.
And I think the pandemic had something to do with that too, because people were home, and there's a young fellow in the Philadelphia area who. And a sideline writes hockey books, and his family owns a hobby company. And he said during the pandemic, their sales went off the charts because people were just buying all kinds of hobby things to make it home. So you never know what's around the corner. But I just want to remind our folks that the Museum of Sports Show is brought to you by the Pachi Franklin Cardiovascular Center, the specialist in non-invasive treatment. And I'm speaking right now with Nick DePachi Jr. His family's memorabilia collection is conservatively estimated at about $35 million. And the Museum of Sports is proud to hopefully one day be the future home for that collection. So Nick, when you were little, 8, 10 years old, were you collecting cards, or were you collecting anything?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think I brought this up once on the show before, that my grandfather every year used to get me the factory sets of Tops for each of the sports. So I have pretty much every factory set from the 90s and early 2000s for baseball, for Tops, for basketball, football. So I have a lot of that. And then he put away a few Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards for me when I was a baby. So those have really appreciated. I mean, Griffey rookies, I think the upper deck one or the Fleer one, but one of them fetches some big money. So I collected cards, and it was also a good bonding experience with my grandpa. We used to sit at the table and we used to sort them out and put everything in binders. Not the Griffey rookie. That was in a special case that they have, but just the factory sets. We would put them in binders.
Well, my cousin Jay Seidman was over the other day at my house. He brought his son, 17-year-old swimming champion, who was looking into possibly going to Villanova, and they surprised me by telling me that they've been buying and selling cards. The kid is very savvy into it, and he said something about a couple thousand dollars for one card, and he's got several more. So and they also have my cousin Jay told me, unopened packages
Pokemon cards. The package is untouched, still in the cellophane wrapper, and I'm told that when you have something like that, that's even more valuable than possibly some individual cards. So people who took good care of that, look, I grew up in a candy store in a section called Brewery Town in Philadelphia, which was 30th and Girard near the zoo. We had comic books. They were 10 cents. Superman, the first Superman, the first detective, the first Batman, the first this one, that one. And of course, I read them. And being growing up in a store, you read them, you're very careful, and you put them back on the shelf so that it can sell. You weren't allowed to keep anything. Same with newspapers, magazines. And I have a picture of my dad in 1942 standing in front of the store, and the whole front row on the bottom of the window are comic books. And I posted that one year, and someone wrote, "Do you have any of those books? Because they're worth thousands, tens of thousands of dollars right now, and they were 10 cents a piece." I could have been somebody. You know, I could have been I could have been a contender.
You could have been a contender.
Yeah. So, have you personally sold any cards from your collection?
I mean, a while back we sold actually a good number of our cards. We had a pretty full collection. Not the ones I'm talking about, because actually cards from the 90s are not, they haven't really retained their value as well. But cards from the 50s, 60s, those cards are and earlier, of course, those are the cards that are that are worth something. And yeah, we did sell the bulk of our card collection to focus more on game used memorabilia, and to focus more on spanning all the sports. So as you know, now collection has not just the major sports, but we have everything from horse racing to NASCAR to golf. I mean, tennis. We have every sport represented that you can think of. Part of it was we had to part with something to buy something else, and the cards were something that we enjoyed them for a long time, but it was time to auction them off.
Well, you know, a lot of people ask me what kind of collection would be in the museum, and I know you and your dad are working to open the museum by around New Year's in Washington Township. And you said last week, I think construction is probably going to start in a couple of weeks, which is very exciting. And the question people ask me is, well, is it going to be Philadelphia memorabilia? And I say yes and no. Yes, tons of stuff. Mike Schmidt and Bernie Parent, and then you got Derek Jeter, and then you got Ty Cobb, and you got Babe Ruth, and you got Rocky Marciano and Joe Louis and Joe Frazier and the 1980 USA hockey team. So it's everything. And you've even got the jersey that was worn in the 1936 Olympics when Jesse Owens ran. And Hitler was very upset that he won. I mean, that's history. So, yeah, it's Philadelphia, but it's international.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, we even have Seabiscuit's blanket that he wore. So, yeah.
Well, you know, that's a fantastic item. Who would know that in the DaPonte collection, they have the blanket that was draped over Seabiscuit when it won? I mean, that is fantastic. And you know what? That leads me to something that I want to mention right now, since it's my show. I'm going to post on the Museum of Sports Facebook, and I have about 3,000 followers there. This museum is going to open around the January 1st, around that time. What unusual item would you like to see put in there? Not somebody's jersey, not somebody's card, something unusual, you know, like the pickle juice jar that Andy Reid or whoever the coach, the trainer was, came up for the game where it was going to be well up in the 90 degree temperature, something like that. The pickle juice, a jar of pickle juice. I mean, I bet we get some wild things that people would say, unusual weird things to put in a museum, and that could be an exhibit all by itself. Weird stuff.
Oh yeah, now we have Johnny Unitas's jock strap, and it's bronzed. So that would fit that category, I would say.
That must have hurt when he put it on. I mean, my God, a bronze jock strap. Whoa, talk about chafing.
I would hope they did it after the fact, but you never know, Lou.
Well, that's true. It's true. I mean, can I ask, do you know why it got bronzed or who bronzed it or did they wash it first?
Well, the original owner of it, well, I guess Unitas was the original owner, but whoever had it to begin with after that, he bronzed it and he owned a bar down in Baltimore and he hung it on the wall.
Fantastic. That goes next to the pickle juice jar. But speaking of jock straps, I have a Flyers jock strap story that in the early days of the Flyers, a young lady made their way down to the locker room after a Flyers home game. And she said to the guard, could I get something from the locker room? And he said, well, you can't go in there. She said, well, could you get me something? And he said, what is it you want? And she said, Ed Van Imp's jock strap. And highly unusual. And the guard said, what? She said, no, I'm serious. I'd like to have his jock strap. It's a true story. It's been published. So he went into the locker room, the guard, and he said to Frank Lewis, the trainer, there's a woman outside would like to get Ed Van Imp's jock strap. And Frank Lewis says, inner or outer? Apparently, they wear two jock straps, one underneath the cup, one with a cup and then one over it. And so he came out and the guard said to the girl, inner or outer? She said, I'll take either. I don't care.
Why not both?
Oh, well, I don't know whether, I don't remember the rest of the story, whether she actually got it or not, but that's an unusual item. You got one bronze, we got an inner or outer. It's just crazy. But look, this is all the time we got, Nick. Thank you for jumping on early. It's been a crazy show, but we're having a lot of fun here. And I want to thank our guests, Chris Wheeler, the great Phillies longtime announcer and employee, a good friend who comes on with all kinds of great stuff. And we're very sorry that Leon Searcy Jr., the NFL former all-pro lineman, had a family emergency, and we'll try to get him on next week. But Nick, you filled in admirably, and if the show ever gets some really great sponsors, we'll pay you.
All right, thank you, Lou.
My pleasure. And for the missing Doug Scheimel and the absent Susan Baxter, this is Lou Scheinfeld reminding you what our good friend Carly Simon always says: these are the good old days.
These are the good old days.